morning. This is YF Kenmore with the Kenmore team of Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you doing?
Well, I'm still praying for snow. I know people think I'm nuts, but, you know, we're getting all this gookie mix and then the really cold temperatures. And
yes. Well, at least cold. What are you talking about? 40 felt like a heat wave earlier.
Well, earlier this week and the week before and the week before that.
But it was, it was definitely cold. In fact, it was fun to kind of see some of those skating ice hockey pictures out on some of the local ponds
and the big
out
ice
there.
Jam out in the Yakima.
So it did provide a certain amount of entertainment, but I tell you what, it was a little chilly at some houses this week. We had a couple. As much as we talk about sprinklers and blowouts and stuff, sometimes we found this week they're not always quite done properly. As we had a couple little valves where the whole system hadn't been blown out. Or where
people forgot to set the thermostat.
And the cold temperature definitely finds that very quickly. But it was, for the most part, we made it through pretty good, and it's been still pretty steady and a lot going on out there. Normally, we would have with us our in-house resident lending expert, Mr. Tom Coyne, but he is a little bit under the weather. It looks like some of that stuff going around finally got to him.
Did you listen carefully in the background to hear if you could, to see if you could hear in the background?
Exactly. Or I wasn't sure. Hopefully one of those Christmas parties didn't get a little out of hand last night.
Oh, my.
But we will see him back here next week, and we wish him to be feeling better. We always like to start off with kind of our celebrity real estate story. Boy, this one kind of caught my attention in the headlines when it was listed as Ty Cobb property for sale. Now that's,
ooh, does that mean it's haunted by a crabby ghost?
Well, that's taking me back. As most people know, the nickname Georgia Peach was not usually too peachy for sure. But his complicated personality, he also had a love of nature, which had led him to buy a Lake Tahoe cabin estate.
Mm.
Now that property was purchased, 75 years ago, purchased it, when he retired, and that is on the market now. It's on basically 2 acres that overlook Zephyr Cove, right up there on Lake Tahoe. So, gorgeous property, as you can imagine, listed now at $6.5 million.
Wow.
It didn't say what he purchased it for 75 years ago, but I bet it wasn't quite that
not
much.
Anywhere close to that.
So the family had renovated the property in the early 90s. It sits on 1 acre and then had another 2 acre site with it that was approved for development. So finally getting rid of it, but that was not a name that I expected to see when I went searching for celebrity real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very interesting there. Ty Cobb still has a property in the family, and it is for sale.
And if you want to find out what we mean, just watch the baseball movie that had Tommy Lee Jones as Ty Cobb.
That will definitely let you know about personality there for sure.
Yeah.
Today is when we are looking at kind of the market recap. We're kind of winding down 2013 here, and we've got enough information in that we can really take a look at those statistics and start to kind of break down where the market is, what it's done, and then look at some segments in there. I kind of picked out some interesting stats that you might normally hear about in real estate headlines to report on today to kind of give us a different look on that and try to make statistics interesting if at all possible.
Well, they can be because it shows the growth and the stimulus of the community and all that, and it really is interesting.
It really is. And so one of the reasons that we do this is we look into, a lot of times people will ask you, well, how's the market? and so that's always an interesting question, and it leads to more questions generally. How's the market in your city? How's the market in Tri-Cities? How's the market overall? Or are you asking how's the market for your neighborhood and your style of house?
Or how's the market for buyers or sellers or investors or commercial property?
So we always, that is why I guess they say real estate's always a great conversation starter, because it, this time of year with all the Christmas parties and stuff going, well, I generally have a lot to talk about. In fact, I'm sure my wife's about tired of hearing about it at this point. She's pretty good about just leaving, though. So
I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out of here. I'll go talk to somebody that's not talking real estate. So one of the first things we did to kind of answer that question that I looked at is overall, is I said, okay, let's answer that general market question. How is the market? So I pulled these stats, just so everybody knows, these were good through the 11th. So I worked on this on Wednesday, kind of formulating all of this data. Pulled these numbers through Wednesday to see where are we at with this market. And then what I did for our comparisons, just to be fair, I compared through December 11th of 2012. So kind of the exact same time frames. I left off the last 3 weeks that we're looking here so that those stats are equal to equal. I kind of apples to apples for our comparison. So this time last year, in 2012, the market had closed 2,917 transactions.
So almost 3,000.
Almost 3,000. Now through 2013, through this week, we have closed in the market 3,252.
Wow.
So we're talking an 11% increase.
Almost 300 more.
In the number of transactions. And so one of the things people don't always realize is, you know, our memories, recently we had the government shut down and we had kind of activity slow a little bit there. And that wasn't too long ago. And so, yeah, I think, but when you go back and look at the whole year and that we had, you know, a very successful summer and we had very low interest rates to start the year off, you know, kind of really start the year off in overdrive, it really propelled the market as far as transaction-wise to almost being up 11%.
Wow.
So 10 to 11% in the number of transactions. And then what's interesting is November recorded the highest average sales price that we had seen all year, and that was $217,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last November in 2012, for comparison, when we look back, $211,000. So, you know, about roughly a $6,000 bump, you know, in the average price point there. So, for Tri-Cities, when we look at that, and we look at that 2 to 3% appreciation, that's kind of running right in that mark. And I love that steady appreciation, slow, steady growth that we generally get in this market.
Yeah.
And it looks like this year is not an exception to that. We don't like exceptions generally.
No.
Unless they're really, really high, but that usually means something else is happening.
But then it's
going to
correct itself.
So this year is kind of no exception, just kind of a steady as she goes year that we're looking at right there. So that data is coming in looking really, really nice. So the next thing is we analyze markets that people ask is, what's happened in the four major cities? What's happened in Pasco, Richland, Kennewick, and West Richland?
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I did is start to pull the data together and analyze who owns what percentage of the market in those different cities. So the first one I've got on my list here is Pasco. And of those 3,200 transactions this year, 767 of those have occurred in Pasco. And that represents about 24% of the market in Pasco. Richland comes in at almost identical numbers, just about 10 sales behind, 757. So that's 23% of the market in Richland. Kennewick, obviously the big winner here in market share. Kennewick recording 36% market share, almost 1,160 transactions in Kennewick.
Wow.
And then we don't forget West Richland.
Yes.
Don't leave them out. They are statistically significant.
Yes.
And so 324 transactions in our multiple listing service in West Richland, representing about 10% of the market.
And, you know, that's pretty good when you consider that it has grown, but it's still smaller than the others. But a lot of people are looking out there.
A lot of people are looking out there. And then as we kind of delve into the next statistics, there's one of West Richland that surprised me, and so we'll get into that in a minute. So compared over year to year, I like to look at who were the winners and who kind of stayed the same. So in 2012, Pasco actually had 25% of the market, slight decrease to 24% this year. So small decrease in market share in Pasco. Richland actually gained a percentage in market share. They were 22% last year, 23% this year. And Kennewick made huge strides. They were only 33% of the market this year, in 2012, and this year 36%. So they gained a full 3 percentage points on market share as the number of sales that are going on there. And so a lot of development in Kennewick. You had a lot of new, very popular subdivisions out there. Mm-hmm. Hanson Park was still going very strong. New phase of Fountain Hills, so a large number of sales in Fountain Hills there behind Costco. And then you also had the continued development in south around Southridge and south out in South Kennewick.
Every time you drive by, it gets bigger.
And so all of those developments kind of combined and the big push they had there really saw them gain some market share as far as the percentage of sales in Kennewick. And from talking with the mayor of Kennewick a couple of weeks ago on the show, it'll be interesting. That number might change even more as some of those subdivisions come on. Mm-hmm. But we also are going to have a lot going on, too, in the South Richland corridor with a lot of Badger Mountain South and some of those developments. So it's going to be really interesting to see how those market shares change over the next year when we look at this data next year. And the next thing a lot of times people will ask is, what are the average days on the market? What are the average days on the market that I can expect my house to be on the market? And that's a hard question to answer. We like to look specifically at your comparables. So when we're looking at saying, okay, what style of house do you have? How big is your house? What price range are you in? And then develop an average days on the market for that specific price range, because that can change things drastically. But it was really interesting when I started to pull the data by city to see what went on out there. And this is one of the data I was telling you about, McKay. So fastest homes sold out of the four cities. What do you think?
Fastest homes sold?
Lowest days on the market.
I'm going to say West Richland.
You got it. That was a surprise. West Richland came in at only 60 days on the market. And for this year, they actually had the highest average sales price.
Wow.
$240,800 as the average sales price out there. And 60 days on the market, so lowest days on the market. The next quickest was Pasco. So Pasco days on the market, 68. But look at the difference. Average sales price there, $190,000. Versus West Richland at $240,000. And then we've got the next fastest was Richland, 75 days on the market, average sales price $237,000. So just below West Richland. And then Kennewick, which is interesting because Kennewick had the largest number of transactions, so the biggest number of market share, but longest days on the market, 78 days on the market. Mm-hmm. So we're talking from West Richland to Kennewick, we're talking almost a 3 weeks difference in an average. So when you really look at that, that's an important number to consider when you're thinking about how long the house is going to be on the market. And then we looked at total dollar volume transacted. So what does this dollar volume mean? How much real estate changed hands over the course of 2013? And we've got total dollar volume that those transactions represent in those four cities, $638,766,000. So it's really a staggering number when you take those 3,200 transactions together, put them together, look at the exact dollar volumes of what's going on. There's still a significant amount of real estate changing hands in our local economy.
Wow. $638 million. That sounds like a starter home in LA.
There you go. That's 15 transactions in the celebrity real estate news that we normally have. Over 3,200 around here. So that kind of breaks down the numbers that we look at through city. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about specific styles, what styles are selling, and what type of financing are they using to buy these homes in the price of these.
We'll be right back on NewsTalk 870.
We'll be right back.
Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been doing a 2013 market recap show, looking at some of the stats, the numbers, the different cities, the segments of the market, what's been selling, what the changes have been, and kind of how the percentages break out. So before the break, McKay, I talked about style.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what, this year, let's break it down by style of home and see where those sales have come out. What are you thinking there?
Well, I've always liked two-story homes.
Okay.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they're selling better than, say, the traditional ranch rambler style.
Well, the statistic is a little shocking this year.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had to run it twice because I thought something was askew in the numbers. But the two stories were outsold almost 3-1 by ramblers.
Wow.
Yeah, the two-story represented 20% of our market. Ramblers, the one-level ramblers represented 59% of the market sales.
Well, when you go look at the new developments, too, you know, you'll see a mix, but you see a lot of those where, the garage out front, maybe the door set back.
Exactly right. Very popular floor plan. One of the reasons that floor plan is so popular is because you can do a lot of things with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very versatile floor plan. A lot of times you see a first-time home buyer get into a house like that, smaller, one level, more affordable. And then a lot of times, too, on the opposite end of things, you see folks downsizing and retiring to a house like that. Say they've had the two-story when they had all the kids and needed all the space. And so you kind of get people on the front end of their buying life cycle and on the end of it. So very versatile type of floor plans. And, boy, that sure is represented with 59% of the sales.
Wow.
The other big segment, Rambler Basements, which kind of combine the best of both worlds. A lot of times you get that one-level master kitchen on the main, but you have that basement play area, second living area down. And that was 10% of our market, 317 sales.
That's quite a few.
And then I also ran, kind of rounding out and finishing out, tri-levels. You look at the older, where tri-levels were very popular at one point.
We grew up in a garrison home that had a daylight basement.
There you go. 3% of sales only. 84 tri-levels. And then mid-entries, kind of in that same, but they do have their own segment in our data, so we can pull those out. Another 3%. So they kind of round out the last 6 or 7% there of sales. But the Ramblers, by far, owning the market right now in that style.
And I'm sure that influences contractors and designers and developers.
It really does. We look at numbers like this and look at what has been sold and done, and as we're deciding which spec homes for the builders to build and where to go next, it really helps them decide, you know, here's a better chance of getting that sale and getting that resale.
And parade of homes, too.
Yeah, exactly. And parade of homes, it helps them kind of gauge what their likelihood is of being able to resell that house. Mr. Tom Coyne's gone. I'm going to have to update him on these market, on these loan numbers. He, you know, missed out today, feeling a little under the weather. But just for him, I went through and broke out how were the homes purchased. What type of money were the folks using, other than green, to purchase the house? And let's just start there. Let's start with cash. Let's start with cash transactions in our market.
Mm-hmm.
No loan cash transactions in our market last year represented 14% of the market purchases.
Wow.
So 465 of those purchases, cash transactions.
Where the people just wrote the check, here you go.
They just wrote the check, here you go, no mortgage. Next, in the market segments, I looked at VA loans that were done on these properties, and that represents about 10% of our market. 302 transactions, so very close to 10% of our market. And then we start to get into some of the bigger numbers. So FHA, and we talk a lot about FHA being kind of traditionally the lowest down payment option for folks. If they have not as much credit as a traditional borrower, then sometimes FHA is a way to go. But we've also talked about there being a lot of changes with that program and that not being a great option for people in the future because of cost. But still, representative 21% of our market purchases. So, you know, we've got almost 30% of our market in FHA and VA. And then, as we would expect, traditional, conventional mortgages 50% of the market, 1,614 transactions. A segment that people will call on a lot but does not happen very often and is almost statistically not significant, but it is there, and that's the real estate contract. That's where the owner owns the property outright, and they sell that property on a contract, on basically on a note. They carry the contract for the borrower. And only 22 transactions out of the 3,200 were done that way, just barely eking. My program rounded up to 1%, slightly below 1% there. So not happening very often, but there are obviously 22 transactions where that did happen this year. So we're kind of utilizing that data. I know Tom uses that data quite a bit. But one of the things it also helps us with is preparing your house for sale. We say when we sit down with the client, we can look at this data and say, okay, 30% of the time sales around here are done either FHA or VA. You have some peeling paint on the back of your house and around those doorways. That's not going to qualify you for FHA. In fact, it's not going to be able to be done. So a lot of, if you want to keep with that segment, if you want to market to that 30%, then we're going to need to have those repairs done so that your house is eligible to be bought with a loan program like that. And so we're really kind of weighing, is it significant? What do you need to do to be able to qualify for this type of loan program? And if you don't make those changes, then you're eliminating 30% of the potential buyers out there for your property. So that's one of the things that we're always looking at with folks and kind of saying, okay, what do we have going on here? The next thing that we do is we break down by price point in the market. I went through and broke down how many homes sold at a certain price point. So how does that help my chances of being able to sell? What are the chances compared to the market that we're going to sell? So the first segment that I ran was under 100,000. Under 100,000, 257 transactions, just about 8% of our market. So only 8% of our market now is under 100,000.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of times you'll list properties like that. Maybe a property is slightly distressed or needs some work. But many times properties in that price range go very, very quickly because there's a lot of people looking to get into that entry-level market, but not a lot that comes available. So that's one thing to really, really look at there. The next segment that I looked at, I kind of started to break it down into $50,000 segments. So we jumped from 100 to 149,999. So basically 100 to 150. Now we get to some big numbers where you start to see the bulk of our market. 20% of our sales are 100 to 150,000. So that is a big chunk of the market segment. So when you look at that, when you're thinking about selling, you have a good chance of selling when you're in that price point. That's where a lot of the transactions take place. Next segment, then obviously we looked at was 150 to 200,000, 915 transactions, 28% of our market,
almost a third.
Yeah, 28% of our market happens from 150 to 200,000. So when you're in that price point, there's a high likelihood that you will sell it when priced properly. So when you look at those stats, you say, okay, this market segment is moving, and it's moving big time. You know, here's where I need to be to capture the bulk of the sales that are going on in the market. So when you look at that, and when you put those two together from 100 to 200, you know, we're looking at 48% of our market, so the
almost
bulk
half
of our market. And that makes sense when we talked about the average sales price being around 217. You'd have to have a lot of it in there. Really a big chunk of our market in there. Next segment, 200 to 250,000, again, very significant at 17%. So a lot of action happening there. And then, John, can you imagine which direction the numbers are going to go?
Probably down.
We keep going up in price. It maintains fairly steady, 250 to 300, still bringing in 12% of our market share. And then the numbers really start to dry up after that.
Over 300.
Over 300. 300 to 350, only 7% of our market. And then we go 350 to 400, we start to drop. 350 to 400 represents only 3% of our market.
Wow.
400, to 450, 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
450 to 500,000, 1%.
Mm.
1% of our market, 34 transactions.
So how many were there over 500,000?
Well, my calculator didn't recognize those low percentages. I kept getting an error code that I didn't understand. So over that, now, I mean, it's a decent number, but when you break it down into those segments like we have been, it's pretty low. So you've got, we talked about 5 to 550.
Mm-hmm.
5 to 550 still brought in 25.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically 0.75, you know, percent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 550 to 600, it drops off to only 16 transactions.
Ooh.
So you're about one a month. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you're 550 to 600, you know, about one a month is going to sell. So you're really kind of debating, you know, and a lot of times what happens, why there's less transactions in our multiple for this dollar range versus the other ones, is another thing that happens is when you go above 500, we really get into a lot of the custom builds.
Yeah.
Where people work directly with the builder, and that's not an MLS transaction that we track. A lot of times, if people are going to spend that amount of money, they're going to build a custom home and get it exactly how they want. But a lot of times, too, people don't, for various reasons, they might not have time to go through that. They might not want the hassle. So there are transactions that happen in that segment. But when we go 550 to 6, it goes to only 16, one-half of 1%.
Wow.
And then when we go, you know, I'll just lump together 600 to a million altogether because that puts us at 20 transactions.
Mm-hmm.
It happened from 600,000 to a million.
Wow.
So it is interesting that, yeah, but we really look at that bulk of our markets, those numbers really starting to drop after 350. And it's a different market. And so one of the things we're always looking at is we're comparing these numbers that we have versus the amount of inventory that's on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked, as you introed the show, you talked about buyer's market, seller's market. In some of these higher-end segments, it's a buyer's market because there's more inventory than sales that are happening. In some of these lower segments where we have 28% of the market existing in that lower segment, in some of those lower segments, many times it's a seller's market because there's not enough inventory at those price points for the buyers buying.
And there's a high demand.
So we can really look at those segments and help decide how we're going to structure your pricing, you know, how aggressive we can be on pricing, where we need to be pricing the home for sale. So those are a couple of the items that that we're always looking at. These are kind of the market segments, what's going on. It's been a great year. I mean, the numbers are there. We've got some mild appreciation, which we like to see, very steady growth, number of transactions up. So really, when we look back at this market recap, it has been segment-wise, you know, overall a very strong year. And so there's been a lot of great sales there that we've had. And we've been very fortunate to work in this market, deal with all of the listeners as clients. We appreciate all the referrals we've gotten this year. And that is kind of our market recap there. Of course, I have property in these segments, John, that I can tell you about.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a quick pick three. I wanted to get some amazing properties back in front of everybody again. This one just doesn't come up very often, and we've got Yakima River frontage.
Ooh.
So we've got 76205 North Gross Cup Road, and this property is a four-bedroom, two-bath. Now, we talked about this Rambler, okay? So that's in the segment we want. And they built a huge new shop that has a pass-through 14-foot doors for the RV bay.
Ooh.
You don't even have to back up, McKay.
You just drive through.
It's got an in-ground pool, new master bathroom, large master suite, modern updates in the kitchen, just a fantastic property in a stunning location. 1.45 acres, almost 1.5 acres.
Ooh.
2,100 square foot Rambler on the Yakima River, and we're priced at $335,000. Very difficult to get river frontage in that price point.
Yeah.
So that's a fantastic listing that we've got. Second one that we've got is 824 South 38th. This is out in West Richland. This house was built in 2011. Oh, did I say West Richland?
Yes.
I talked about that market segment.
Big growth.
Very strong. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, plus they've got a bonus room in this Rambler also.
Mm.
I'm hitting you with the segments that are going to sell here. And this is 2,100 square feet, half acre, lots of plenty of room for a shop. And this house is priced at $200,000. The owners recently reduced the price $10,000 and said, let's move it. Let's get this thing gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a fantastic, fantastic property to check out. Third one we've got on our list is 4311 Antigua Drive. So this is out in West Pasco.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about the market segment out there. This is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath house plus a den on a corner lot.
Ooh.
So you kind of get away where you don't feel so crowded in there. You feel like you've got that room, not a neighbor on each side being on the corner lot. Lots of living space. This house is 2,500 square feet, 2,537, tile floors, entertainment-sized living room, plus you get the formal dining room also. You get the huge, huge master suite, and then a big backyard and large pool. And you're getting this at $240,000.
Wow.
So we're coming in under $100 a square foot for that size of home. Just fantastic, fantastic location. So that's our pick three this week and kind of our market segment wrap-up. If you have any questions about neighborhoods or different segments that we might not have gone over on the show, feel free. You can always give me a call, 727-8977. Shoot us a message at kenmoreteam.com. We'd be glad to look up the information for you, get you that information so you can make smart real estate choices. And we'll be right back here next week giving Tom Coyne a hard time for not being here.
Absolutely. On News Talk 870.